football on off the ball.
Regardless of the Declan Rice handball, which was a handball, it was handball, no matter what you say or any way you look at it, it's a foul because he's got his arm around the guy's shoulders. He's dragging the guy down who can't jump. VAR should be checking that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.
We had our end card there. It was happy Andy Farrell, sad Carla Ward, and sad Arnie Slot, because that's what happened last night. Liverpool, it turns out, are absolutely useless. We'll talk about that with Vinnie Perth around about 8:45. Green 15.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
I hope so. It's not always good. Are there bad green 15s?
Well, I mean, you know, mark your stuff out of 10 there. Give your
This one's going to be 10 out of 10.
Oof.
Or I plan it to be.
Perfection. Where do you go for perfection?
All right. Yeah.
Well, it's 180.
We'll let the viewers be the judge of that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but you asked me, so, you know.
Julianne Russell and Sue Ronan are going to be our first guests this morning talking about heartbreak for the Republic of Ireland last night. You were there?
I was, yeah. They played exceptionally, especially in the first half. Thought I was watching probably the most complete Carla Ward performance in the first 45 minutes. Their defensive setup was extremely disciplined. Like, even, I think it was for the Emily Murphy half volley chance that was saved quite well. Denise O'Sullivan didn't even give her a second to kind of process the miss, screaming at her to get back into shape. So it was a bit of in the first half, Katie McKay was a little bit further forward, or was getting further forward, but in the second half, she seemed to be dropping back into a 5-3-2 at left centre back. But yeah, they'd be very disappointed with the two goals they did give away. Ireland's goal was brilliant. Katie McCabe and Emily Murphy looked great on the left hand side all game long. But the two goals they gave away were just scrappy enough. I suppose the first goal was a brilliant effort, but that second goal is going to haunt them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought McCabe's defending for the French equaliser was really bad. She totally committed herself to the shot and was just kind of left for dead.
Yeah.
And I say that with the full acknowledgement about how, not just the part of McCabe, but how good she was in the first half. Because that goal was actually a 1-2.
Yeah.
It was a very prolonged 1-2. So McCabe intercepted the ball, fired in, but Murphy's no look, reverse.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. We don't see that much with this Irish team. We don't see that much with Irish football. Is the subtlety and technique like that, and then the finish. Confident. It was good, but that wasn't out of the blue. Like, so the French had this breakaway in the first minute, right? And this was the worry about them that they talked about, not just the quality that they had. They won like 10 games in a row. The first 10 games in 2025, they won. And the 11th was a penalty shootout defeat to Germany, right?
Yeah.
So, like, strong, very strong. So they're going to be better, and they're going to have more of the ball, but they're also very dangerous in the counterattacks. So there's loads to worry about. And I thought that was going to be the case for the night, for the first minute. We rode that mini storm. And then after that, Denise O'Sullivan's true ball. Denise O'Sullivan did a very good game. That true ball to Emily Murphy. Now, I was screaming at TV last man, but there was cover. And also, I think she actually got the ball. I think it was a fairly generous free.
No, I thought totally she got the ball. I think it was very much a home crowd decision, to be honest.
The complete opposite conclusion after my initial feeling was red card. I was like, oh shit, it was actually a great tackle. And Megan Connolly took that free, saved. But we were not going to, it was confident.
Yeah.
It was just the confident display.
Well,
you know?
The things I was hearing before the game was, I just hope we don't get hammered.
Yeah.
From people that I was going to the game, and I was kind of like, I don't know about that.
The thing about it, there is that that game last year, that 4-0 defeat early enough into Carla Ward's tenure. And there is a hammering in the Irish team that is true every so often. So I wouldn't have been surprised if France were knocking 4 or 5 past, but at the same time, the quality that they showed, it was like, I know, look, they're very much together. And I wonder, Carla Ward, a few doubts at the start, like, this is actually a proper team. And it was a very strong side as well. Like, everyone was available, really.
Yeah. And yeah, there's just depth issues there for me. Like, there's a reason that, was it only one substitution we made in the end? Abby Larkin came on, maybe two.
Abby Larkin came on for Kira Caruso.
And those depth issues are going to be made more manifest at the weekend because there's significant injury doubts about.
Yeah.
A couple of our key players.
Denise being one of them. I suppose it's kind of...
And Katie McCabe?
Potentially.
There was... Carla Ward talked about there was a knock there. She actually said, I don't know if you noticed, but we moved her. So she was on the usual left flank. She moved into the centre in the second half.
I think they're both doubts for the game against the Dutch at the weekend.
So, look, that could explain the French equaliser. I just thought it was very uncharacteristic the way she firstly committed to the shot and then kind of not gave up on it, but it was, she looked beaten by it. Yeah, it's a bit of a heartbreak. And then Denise Sullivan off the line, deep into injury.
Yeah, that's just pure. Like, yeah, Toto with the clear off the line. That's just pure. In fairness, great clearance, but it was literally straight at her. So she kind of just got lucky in which position she was in. But yeah, great performance. Like, but even, I suppose, in the last 10 minutes, a few decisions probably went against them, just in terms of consistency around. There was one where Emily Murphy kind of got cleared off the ball. Mm. Last couple of minutes, and there was an exact foul like that earlier in the game that was given for the French. There's a couple of those type of incidents throughout the game where the crowd were unhappy with. But the handball itself, I know it was a bit of contention around that, but I didn't actually, I was pretty far away, so I didn't actually see the action itself.
It would have been very generous.
Yeah.
Even if it did hit the hand, it was closer than you and I are right now, Ger.
Yeah.
And that's pretty close. And there's nothing she could do about it, really. If it was giving it away, physically, we'd be livid.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't know he had broken down. 8,300 at this Dara. It's had a stadium. Yeah. According to Irish Examiner here, John Fallon. 10,500 capacity. Did it feel that way? It was a good atmosphere?
Yeah, it was a good atmosphere. Yeah. These games, there's plenty of kids coming along, families, and they're kind of singing throughout the game, so that's great to hear. There's a young French kid behind me that just kept screaming Allez le Bleu all game long, like would say, Allez le Bleu, Allez le Bleu, Allez le Bleu. Like, on repeat.
That was Cameron, wasn't
full
it?
19, yeah, it was just Cameron. Just outside there. He's had a long night. For the full 90 minutes, I have a bit of a headache this morning from it, but to be honest.
You have a football hangover?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It's late kickoff. It's 7:30 in Tala. But, yeah, it was a good atmosphere. It was around about 8,000, yeah. I'd say that's slight. It was probably as many were sold. There was a few pockets of empty seats, but for the most part, it was a great atmosphere, to be fair. And it was as loud as it was all game towards the very end when the handball wasn't given. There was a lot of booing going on.
Yeah.
Which is also great to see.
I don't know if they played with, let's say, the pressure slightly off. They won't get embarrassed by France, but they do have that guarantee of the playoff, and only the top team gets through here automatically to the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough now. So they go to the Netherlands this weekend.
Utrecht.
Yeah. Stacked weekend of sport, actually.
The Netherlands and Poland drew with each other, so they have a point. Yeah. Like, France are always the favourites to go through from this group anyway. So.
Yeah, totally. And Ward had watched the first hour of that, actually, before the Ireland game. So, like, there's plenty to, I wouldn't say fear, but to concentrate themselves on these games. I don't know if they're playing with a little bit of abandon because of what they have, that backup that they've guaranteed. But remember under Aidan Gleeson, do you remember in League B they ran the show?
Yeah.
And League A was completely opposite.
It's a massive.
And they went up.
Gulf,
like, so I think they're gradually evolving to this point where they're making themselves at home here. If you had no context for this match last night, you'd say it's an even game.
Yeah.
And now that's, and they'll hate that, by the way. They'll hate you saying to them, oh, it was a great performance. You know, the French are excellent.
Yeah.
Hard luck. It's like, no, no. Like, they were winning that game.
They were 12-1 to win the game yesterday?
Well, 12-1. They were 1-0 up until the 70th minute.
Yeah.
They should have got a point.
And even up to that point, I don't think France had too many clear-cut chances.
No.
Really, like, it wasn't like they're knocking on the door too much. They go that, again, I suppose. That depth will be tested for sure now.
That Caitlin Hayes diag to Emily Murphy in the first half. The chest and shot.
For the half volley, that was a brilliant ball. Yeah, there's some really good stuff in there. I was really impressed. I hadn't been convinced of Emily Murphy. I know she's had a couple of good games now for the last couple of fixtures, but she was very, very good last night.
Hayes had that header as well from that free from Kimi came in the second half. Did you see Denise O'Sullivan's Lauren Robert effort?
Oh, the Scorpion, yeah.
Behind there, right after that, actually, just before the hour mark. It was straight at the keeper, but she was quite close to it. It was class. Do you remember there was a weekend where Olivier Giroud and Henrik Mkhitaryan scored?
Yeah.
Very similar Scorpios. Right? It's a good few years ago now, Ger. About 7 or 8 years ago. And Lauren Robert did it. Lauren Robert. Work rate 5, teamwork 5 in Football Manager. But look at that technique. Do you remember Lauren Robert, Ger?
I do, yeah. I remember that after his first game, Bobby Robson said he was a cross between John Barnes and Ronaldo.
Wow.
The players he'd worked with previously. And everybody was like, well, this guy's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Didn't quite live up to Bobby Robson's hype.
No. I don't even know if he's on our consistent series of cult hero question mark. Lauren Ribeiro at Newcastle.
I'd say some if you're a Newcastle, if you're a match goer.
We have a Newcastle fan in the comments, actually, who was perturbed by the idea that I'd be annoyed at watching them this season. I'm only annoyed because I don't think they fulfill their potential, Newcastle.
Ah, they're terrible.
Yeah. Oh, Champions League, they're good.
So many teams are terrible at the moment, including Liverpool.
So, very nice segue there. Are you enjoying the flaw?
Of what?
The Premier League.
I mean, like, you watch everything through the prism of your own team. So at the moment, when Villa were on an 11-game winning streak and everybody else was flawed and they were pinging in thunder bastards from outside the penalty area, I was like, yeah, this is an incredible league season. Now it's like, this is muck. What is that smell? Oh, I've stepped in something. That's some Villa's form.
Still fourth, though, to be fair.
I know. And like, Liverpool not winning last night.
Yeah.
It doesn't guarantee them anything, but if Villa beat Chelsea tonight, which, let's face it, Chelsea are also terrible, then they'll be safe. They will be guaranteed Champions League football. I'd put my house on it that they'll play Champions League football next season if Villa win tonight. But if they lose, the gap to Chelsea suddenly becomes very doable for Chelsea and very doable for even for that awful Liverpool team that we saw last night.
And what do you think will happen tonight? Between Villa and Chelsea,
I think it'll be a scratchy, awful to watch 1-1 draw.
It's at your place, is it?
Yeah.
It's at Villa Park. Quite a good few games on tonight, like Brighton against Arsenal at the same time.
Too much going on, yeah.
And at the other end of the table, Fulham against West Ham. Huge opportunity here for West Ham. Leeds last night, home to Sunderland last night.
So Wolves are still the favourite to finish the bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah, of course they are.
I would not make Wolves favourite to finish bottom of the Premier League.
You think Burnley are going to finish 20th?
I like the look of the odds on Wolves not being...
you think they'll go down, but they won't finish rock bottom.
Do you want to know who Wolves... Wolves, obviously, their next game is obviously against Liverpool. Again.
The FA Cup, same
team.
Do you think that Liverpool will go home?
I think Liverpool will go home, yeah.
I've looked at it this morning. It's a 2.25-hour drive from Molineux to Anfield.
I think Liverpool are in their own beds at the moment.
Yeah, because it's only up the road. Like,
yeah.
Now the Dublin coach, to Waterford.
The coach steamed down whatever the... Or up, motorway. Or over. Who cares? The world is constantly spinning. It's always the one direction anyway. But Wolves, will I just run you through Wolves' fixtures?
Yeah,
between now
it,
and
yeah.
the end of the season?
I don't think it matters that much, but go ahead. I'll tell you why.
They're like 150-1 on to be relegated, which is like totally... You know, that's a certainty.
But no, I am interested, because you said this to me pre-show and I haven't looked, so... go ahead.
So they are at Brentford, which obviously is a hard out at the moment because Brentford are doing well. But Brentford also against the bad teams, not great.
Yeah.
Then they're at West Ham, which it's not a six-pointer because Wolves are already down. Mm. No, don't even think about it. And then it's Leeds, but it's the middle of the afternoon Leeds at Elland Road. 3 o'clock.
Well, I mean, nighttime Leeds, it's gone now.
No lights.
That's two in a row they've lost under the lights.
At Elland Road.
Yeah.
And then it's Spurs at home. And then it's Sunderland who've made the magical 40 points and probably aren't going to qualify and don't want to qualify for Europa League. So they're already on the beach on the 2nd of May, Maybank holiday weekend. They're like, yeah, thanks very much. That's Sunderland at home. Then it's Brighton away, who've already been safe by that point. And then it's Fulham, who might be fighting for a Europa League place, but might not, might also be finished. Yeah. And then on the last day of the season, it's Burnley away.
I would counter that, right? And that is, it's a generous fixture list and it's well sold. It's well sold game by game.
It's an amazing fixture list.
My only retort is, it doesn't matter. Bring on the big games because that's the only way they're responding. They've beaten Liverpool and they've beaten Aston Villa and they've drawn with Arsenal. Give them the big boys.
Well, Liverpool
on rotation.
Do you think if they were going to avoid relegation, right? Let's say this is like one of the weirdest situations of all time, where last week they were vying not to be Derby County 2008,
and now they could be West Bromwich Albion 2005,
or they
under
could
Brian
be
Robson.
Villa under Dean Smith, who won 5 games in a row to save them.
So they're currently 11 points from safety, but they have played 2 more games.
I know, but everyone's going to lose games tonight.
What?
All those other teams are going to lose games tonight. That's only one game.
Well, you never know.
I wouldn't have. I don't think it's for.
They've got to make it past
Fulham, West Ham,
three teams, and potentially four.
So Burnley are dropping.
150-1, that would be a miracle. That is a miracle in football.
They're 150-1 on to be relegated.
Yeah, if they were to avoid relegation.
Yeah.
I think the path that
you're advising me not to spend good money after bad.
I think the path that you've laid out is something to be fearful of for the Wolverhampton Wanderers faithful. Give them the big boys.
But can I counter that by saying, if you're Rob Edwards, you're like, okay, I realise that what you wanted here was, you're big time Charlies. You only get, it was a derby. Well, let's face it, Aston Villa isn't the most glamorous of the teams in the world, but it is a derby. So
Aston Villa are in the Champions League places, George.
It's big for them. And then it's Liverpool, obviously, who, you know, are Liverpool, one of the most storied franchises in all of world sports.
Yep.
But every game's a cup final from this point forward.
The old cliche. You know, it's true.
That's what you
cup
do.
Final for everyone.
You tap into it.
Now, you're saying, okay, so Villa, not that Hollywood of a game. Liverpool, not the team they were, and that's putting it mildly from last season, right?
Yeah.
But to the point of the original question on this topic, Jared, about the state of the Premier League, that's it. Like, everyone's a bit flawed.
Yeah.
So do you know what I mean?
Oh,
and they just got a point off Arsenal. So I think
Wolves are totally
give them the bigger boys. Give them the bigger boys, right? Give them the likes.
So you want a fixture list of Man United, Chelsea,
Newcastle, Man United, Spurs, they'll have a chance, right? If they have a game, you know, like a Fulham at home.
Brentford.
A Brentford away, right? There's eyes off them now.
Yeah.
It's like, Brentford Wolves, I've got to skip. Yeah.
But sorry, your other theory was maybe they've relaxed into it and they started to play well.
Well,
again.
I said that to you outside there. I was thinking, because Rob Edwards was appointed in mid-November. So this wasn't like this just happened a couple of weeks ago, right? So it took Edwards quite a while for Wolves to get going. That was only Wolves' first consecutive victories since April last year, last night. First time we've won 2 in a row in the Premier League, right?
Good team in April, you're telling me.
Right?
That's what I'm hearing there.
And, well, that was a different version of Wolves, isn't it, last season? Now, the theory I have is that pressure off, yeah. And in life in general, when you stop caring a little bit...
Dangerous.
You can get very dangerous, yeah.
Well, they also...
Very dangerous.
They got rid of the non-scoring striker... Jørgen Strand Larsen, and they've got somebody who's like,
they got great money from, and he's gone to Crystal Palace.
That was a brilliant bit of.
What's he doing going to Palace? Because their manager's going to go. All their best players are going. Anyway, he probably got great money. He's going to London. The thing about Wolves is, I think they're playing with a bit of like, we're going to get relegated anyway. Let's try and enjoy this.
Give it our best shot.
And it is a good attitude in life generally. And when I say they stop caring, I don't mean they stop trying. There's a fine line there.
Yeah.
It's do you know
there's
what they've lost?
To lose, like,
What was that Will Greenwood quote last week? Was it, the fear of losing will prevent you from winning? Is a summary of what he said, a paraphrase of what he said, right? And it's very true, but it's the hardest skill to master in life.
The other thing is,
everyone has fear.
You get this sense of confidence flowing through a team of very good footballers who suddenly have a unified. It was totally a total lost cause before they drew with Arsenal, and even then it was a lost cause, and then it was a lost cause after they drew with Villa, but the changing room was on Fuego. What was the changing room like last night? I haven't seen the footage yet, but footage will emerge, right?
Exactly.
And they're suddenly like, actually, we could all make ourselves many, many millions when you aggregate out the extra years and the contracts and the clauses that, or you can all play championship football next year, or you get sold to Saudi Arabia. Your choice, lads.
Their choice. Andre,
kids out of school.
Andre, who got the winner for Wolves last night, the camera panned to him afterwards. Did you see this? He was on his haunches, sitting down on the turf, looking up. For all intents and purposes, it looked like he lost the game, right? But obviously he's exhausted. It's positive adrenaline seeping under your body.
While I was flicking in the first half, he had one of the most outrageous outside of the foot. Did you see that?
Yeah, this boy's linked to Liverpool. Like, this guy's a talent.
There was like a 50-yard, 70-yard arcing pass.
Yeah.
And the clown of a winger took a touch, and by that stage, the Liverpool defenders were back, and your man, and then the winger actually shanked it into the crowd. Like, oh Jesus! Like, nobody has ever seen a goal where the winger touches the ball and looks up and takes away. He just ping it, hit it. It would have been beautiful.
He sat down afterwards, and it reminded me of Janino at Middlesbrough, 1997,
when they did get relegated.
Yeah, and they got relegated. They got a 3-point deduction that year because they didn't fulfil a fixture away to Blackburn, and he was on his. He was sitting down, he was looking forlornly, and Andre looked that same way last night, and I was thinking, looking at him, he was thinking,
João Gomes, not Andre, apparently, with the pass. So
he was thinking, if only we had started this earlier.
Yeah, but it's not too late. I mean, it is. It's like, you know, the clock is like slightly broken and it's at midnight.
Yeah.
The doomsday clock.
If they avoid it, who gets relegated then? Who's the three? So it's Burnley.
I don't know.
I think Leeds.
Any of them.
I think
the black hole of vortex can get sucked in.
I think Leeds could. I wouldn't 100% rule Leeds out yet. And Burnley are 100% going to go.
Spurs?
No, I don't believe. I just can't see Spurs going. I think Forest could go. If anyone's going to fall in, I don't think they will. I think the bottom three by the end of the season will be the bottom three that we see now.
So you don't give West Ham a chance?
I just don't think West Ham just about have. I'd say it'll be between West Ham and Leeds, but I'd say West Ham will go.
I mean, I did say when I was flicking Van City Shays, disgusted that I incorrectly identified.
But listen, Sunderland.
Sorry, Van City Shay.
Sunderland have.
Are you okay?
Sunderland have broke the chain.
Of which chain?
Championship clubs gone straight back down.
Oh yeah,
for the last two seasons.
You're Devo.
No, a good thing.
You identified this trend.
I wasn't excellent.
Buying this trend a lot.
We did a slat in it. And I think the consensus was from the journalist in question was, yes, this is very worrying. We could very much finish with two of the three going down. I could see a world where Burnley and Leeds go.
So you're 66% correct.
But Sunderland could be the outlier.
In all money, that's a C.
Maybe won't happen. But it's a great thing. You can't have the same 17 teams every season.
It's 2-1 though in college terms. So you're all right. As you get older.
Leeds may stay up.
I think they actually will.
You know what I mean?
I think they'll be fine. Yeah.
So anyway, Liverpool, I'm sure people want to talk about it.
They do. They're dying to.
Well, we have a supporter out there 10 yards away from us as we speak who is perturbed, to say the least, about what he saw last night. And it's a continuing trend. Mo Salah, what was the term given? He looked like a competition winner out there. Now, it's his first goal since start of November, I believe. The Premier League.
Yeah, it was a good finish.
Now, we had the AFCON in fairness, but
it was
still
a great finish.
Did you?
Yeah.
I thought Jose Salah was very poor for that goal. I thought it was a good bit of improvisation from Salah.
Yeah.
But it's Salah because he had no right foot. It was like, I'm going to hit this with my left. Everyone knows I'm going
to
do this.
And it worked.
It's a weird goal.
Toe poke to the near post.
And Salah had made a really good save from Rio Ngamoa. Calls for him to start the games. Cody Gakpo's ineffective. Ngamoa should start, the young fella. But the Salah thing emerged again last night. You know that thing, even when Salah was at its peak, I always said it was like, he's still a bit of liability in possession. Like, he'd still be weak in the ball the odd time. And even when he was at his majestic best. And bear in mind, I put him in my all-time Premier League 11. So obviously rate the boy. But when you see him here, that version of him, like, he really is kind of a liability.
Will he get dropped again?
Don't know.
Such a big fiasco over being dropped the first time.
Yeah, there'd be no Leeds Ellen Road monologue this time.
Off. I think he, you know, one goal in 11 games.
Yeah, he can't
although
do it
is
now.
Just now, so. That's their fifth time this season to lose a game in stoppage time.
Well,
I think certainly the worst of this, but somebody will correct me. Is it a Premier League record?
Substantial anyway, nevertheless. But they were three in a row before this game, you know.
Rapidly on Villa. And I've got to do is touch off Chelsea.
They are flirting with Champions League. So, like, I think the crisis talk has kind of abated a little bit, but I wouldn't say it's back now after last night, but there are concerns about individuals within, like the Curtis Jones incident with the ball at the right back position. He looks up, and I don't know now if it's Curtis Jones' perspective that there's nothing on, no one showing for the ball. But the way he passed it back to Alisson, it was something like he'd seen in the 35th minute. So I just keep the ball here. This is deep into injury time, it's 1-1. And Alisson fecks the ball away, like, and from then, that's where they get the goal. Now, it's a very fortuitous deflection. I think, Arne Slot said afterwards, it wasn't even an opportunity.
Well, that's bollocks.
It was.
It turned out to be.
And
straight talking Dutchman, not talking straight.
So I don't know. There was a tribute to Diogo Jota by both sets of supporters, of course. So it was another emotional night. And I don't know. Like, look, every bit of analysis we do in Liverpool this season, there is probably that asterisk that we can't really quite explain.
Yeah.
Or maybe this is going to be the case anyway, and maybe that they were not going to retain the title and they're going to be back in the Champions League places. Maybe they overachieved last season and maybe they're slightly underachieving this season, and their reality is somewhere in the middle.
Just the amount of money they spent. I know Isak is out, but it just feels like they weren't complacent during the summer, that they did try and improve the team, the title winning team. It's such a massive contrast. Like, I know Wirtz is kind of coming good now, like he is playing better towards this side of the season, but
there's a world where if it does work with all the new signings and the existing players, that it is a phenomenal team.
Yeah, like that's
pretty strong on at the start of the season. I'd say even for the first half of the campaign, that if you get the Newcastle version of Isak, if you get the player that Leverkusen had with Wirtz,
yeah,
Ekitike has actually been on the whole pretty good. There's improvement there, but he's been pretty good. Szoboszlai has come on leaps and bounds as like one of the most important players in the team.
The way people talk about Ekitike is like they found him at Hull for 4 million or 5 million that he's an Andy Robertson style signing. There was 80 million quid spent on him.
Yeah. He was signed from Eintracht Frankfurt. And
it's massively overshadowed. Like he was a massive investment.
I think the comparative expenditure on Ekitike from two other boys up at the final third of the pitch is like, okay, that's fine.
But he's like, people were pointing out that Jokeres had the same, up until last weekend, the same number of goals in all competitions as him. But people are not talking about Jokeres. Oh yeah, he's all right. Well, they maybe they're coming around to that now, but I was like, oh, what a flaw this is. That guy's a chump. Whereas Ekitike is like, oh, he's
well, I think Jokeres was the big number nine outlay that Arsenal crying out for years, whereas Ekitike is one of the forwards who signed this summer or last summer.
Same price.
But Isak and Wirtz were far more expensive, and so the focus is more so on them. And then Ekitike was actually, out of the three, was the most impressive.
Yeah.
So I think that's why people haven't talked about it.
Yeah, like it's an underperforming team and he's coming in his first season, wasn't expected to kick on the way he has.
But why not at that price? Why are the expectations different?
Because they'd signed someone for 30 million.
And so they get a free pass for that. Do you know what I mean? I'm just saying that they're held to different standards. That Ekitike is a massive success because they had these other failures. As opposed to, he's grand for the money. That's exactly what we should be expecting. He's about par. Not like, oh, wow, that's amazing.
Well,
he is amazing in comparison too. But he's a replacement for... Anyway.
You can make the comparison with Šeško as well. Like, so he's a similar kind of fee. It wasn't great to start off with. He's hitting form now, but it's like, wow, this is a great sign. We've been looking now for a striker like this for a while. But we did spend like £70 million on him. So... It shouldn't be that shocking that he's playing well and scoring goals.
I don't think about transfer fees anymore.
It is kind of, yeah.
Those days were done once Kaká went to Real Madrid. From that point onwards, it's been championship manager stuff. You know, you really had to earn your like £6.5 million transfer 20 years ago. You know, every cent of it. It was really value for money in football terms. But now it's gone scandalous. So like how much did Strand Larsen go to Palace for? 50? As in 5-0?
Yeah.
Come on.
What did that get you back in the day? Like 2015?
Yeah.
2015.
What did
that get you?
Yeah.
You know, Zizi was 40.
He would have cost £8.5 million in 2006. And it went with £8.5 million. Fine. That's fine.
£50 million is probably getting you James Rodriguez post-World Cup.
No, Zidane, £46 to £48 million, which says €77 million. That seems like an unusual exchange rate.
Yeah, transfer fees, like, they're gone for me. Like, I don't even look at it anymore.
Well, I think they're important just in terms of like opportunity costs as opposed
to, I mean, like, you know, financially,
this guy, he's doing well, that guy's not doing well, they're the same price, this guy's actually doing exactly the same
thing. If you're telling me you're putting this price tag over his head, like, I don't care about it. I understand that
you don't care about it, but it's, I'm just saying that
you know what I mean?
The narrative around Ekitike is totally different from the narratives around the other two strikers who were signed by Manchester United and by Liverpool, and it's just maybe we all need to cool the jets a little bit and see how
cool the jets about
making these pronouncements that he's
grandiose statement. That no, I think he's been good.
Okay,
I would never say he's great. My initial analysis was good with improvements to make, but good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I would just say the same about Jokeres.
Yeah, I don't get the heat on Jokeres at all.
People were on him from. People were on him from day one. Like, people had it out for him.
They had it out
like
for
touching
him,
like, his hair. Like, people were just dying for him to do something wrong.
Yeah, and he has this.
It was bizarre.
This thing going on. Like, so the kids,
you
know, like,
you want to be very good if you're going to do that.
He's a good finisher. He'll be good. Like, if they stay patient with him, they'll get 3 or 4 years out of him. Like, even if he's Olivier Giroud style Arsenal player, and people are like, Giroud's twice the player that Jokeres was. Giroud was like the lovely goal record. Was never absolutely crucial. If that's his legacy at Arsenal, they'll take it. Like, you win leagues and fellas like that.
Giroud
will get you 15 to 20 goals a season.
The trouble with Giroud was he wasn't Van Persie and he wasn't Thierry Henry, and he wasn't able to fire them to the title. And if Jacques' legacy is that they lose the title because they think he isn't good enough, which I don't think is going to happen, but
yeah, I think it's a big moment.
The League of Ireland is live and exclusive again this Friday on Off the Ball.
There's still time here.
Last Friday night, the champions were battered by arch-rivals Bohemians.
Rovers haven't been good enough.
It was a late show, and to whom it may concern, Bradley's boys made sure this week's opponents were duly warned.
Aaron Green has made it 3-2, a game that was over.
Pretenders to the throne, Derry City came from behind to beat Waterford's with a couple of late ones themselves, and talisman Mikey Duffy struck again.
It's picked up by Mikey Duffy. Oh, he does really well.
On Friday, the Candy Stripes come to Dublin looking to throw the gauntlet down to Rovers. Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City at Tallaght Stadium is live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 this Friday on News Talk and the Go Loud app.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
Can I just some Oliver Holt talking about Chelsea? Chelsea's culture of arrogance starts at the top. No wonder their over-entitled strutters keep getting sent off. Chelsea have had discipline issues for ages now, but there was some hope that the new manager, Liam Rossini, was going to come in and fix it. But then at the weekend, Neto got sent off for two bookings in the space of about 5 minutes, right? And Oliver Holt is talking here. In the era of the ball-playing goalkeeper, Sanchez is so bad with his feet, he fits the cliche of a player whose second touch is a tackle. He fits the Chelsea player template too. It's always somebody else's fault. So when Jurrien Timber scored what turned out to be Arsenal's winner midway through the second half, Sanchez led Chelsea's furious protests. Replay showed there was no foul. Chelsea were protesting because Arsenal had the temerity to score. Sanchez was protesting because he had been found wanting yet again. He protested so much that Neto believed he must be protesting about something real and got himself his first booking for protesting about nothing. It's Chelsea in microcosm. An inability to take responsibility, it spreads like a contagion. So an excellent point.
Yeah.
I wonder though if they just got like a Senny Lemons in.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that goalkeeping thing, or is it like, if I ask you who's the leader of Chelsea out in the pitch?
Well,
it's Enzo, is it?
I mean, it's supposed to be, but then obviously there are some concerns about.
Yeah, well.
Caicedo, you know.
No, but I think people always fall into the trap of very good player equals captain.
No, leaders are people who show up, moral courage.
If your centre mid is class, people automatically assume he's a good leader.
If your centre mid shows moral courage and is appearing for the ball in difficult circumstances and is happy to take it and has good close control,
that's N'Golo Kante.
Getting you out of trouble. Well,
N'Golo Kante was one of the most courageous players you'll ever see. Yeah. I don't know if he's a captain. But the point is that there seems to me a severe lack of leadership at Chelsea. In fact, I think sometimes they overachieve based on the personalities they have out there.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think Liam Delap coming off the bench is just an absolute nightmare to deal with. He just comes on looking for yellow cards.
Oh, deal with as a teammate?
Just as like a Chelsea product. Like, what is he giving them?
Yeah.
He's a horrible disciplinary record. And he's not really scoring goals.
The net, but it was ruled out. Yeah, I was talking with Delap, he hasn't got going yet. I do think there's a player in there. I don't know if it's a Chelsea level player. I say level after just criticising their lack of characters and overachieving. It was like there is still that expectation you have with Chelsea that they're going to come good by the end of the season when the final table is there. It was like they'll be up there.
Yeah, yeah.
You always back Chelsea to perform that way.
Yeah.
But then if you look at the detail of Chelsea, you look around them, it's like it's not a team that fills me with that much excitement or even on their behalf kind of progress. Mm. Do you know what I mean? When I look at the Spurs team, for example, by comparison, Chelsea team is better than the Spurs team, but I don't think the Spurs team is that bad when I look at it on paper. I'm like, they should be better than that.
I thought as well, and then the quality of the performances are really bad, and maybe that speaks to it actually not being a terrible... We're going to talk to Vinny about this a little bit later
we'll
on.
We'll talk to Vinny.
Do you want just Chelsea's next few fixtures, right? At Villa tonight, at Wrexham in the FA Cup fifth round, potential banana skin. Then they have PSG... in the Champions League, which if they were to get through that, I think it transforms their season. But if they go out there, they've Newcastle at home, they're away at Everton, which suddenly the Hill Dickinson looks okay again. Then it's
first one in three months there.
Then it's City and United, and then they've one game against Brighton at the end of April. Like,
yeah,
I don't know where are their points going to come from.
Chelsea, I think they're finished about sixth.
Is that bad for him?
No, that's what I mean.
Like at the minute,
that's what I mean. I think
Do you know, I think
the money they've spent,
they're fine. Yeah, but I don't,
brand new manager though,
the money like, is spent. It's all about how you manage the money. Like, any fool can spend all the money. Like, it's just the way it's spent. It doesn't mean that all those players are worth all that money that they're spending.
Well, so it would not represent a good return on investment. It would actually be hopefully a kick in the nuts for the owners and be like, oh hey, we actually don't have a clue what we're doing here.
Yeah,
like, winning the Club World Cup was supposed to get them out of their financial difficulties, and it certainly helped, but they still, was it 300 million they lost? Was that the most recent figures? It's like outrageous. Which actually, I think, means that, you know, Owen would always have said, the house always wins, and eventually all this money will come back to them in some way, but it's just not happening at the moment. And they've certainly taken a high risk, medium reward strategy by appointing a manager with so little experience.
Yeah, it is, like, for all intents and purposes, like, Liam Rosina should not be Chelsea manager based on his experience.
Just
like,
not yet.
It is wild. Like, Hull, Derby, Strasbourg, Chelsea is a mental transition.
Yeah.
But like, Jesus, if he's good enough, it doesn't actually matter what he does. But, and I actually, and I, that's TBC, to be honest. I wouldn't be saying that he's a bluff or anything like that.
No,
like,
I don't think
he actually could be very good.
Yeah.
I'm just not quite sure yet. I think people get distracted by Will from the in-betweeners comparisons and David Brent. To be like, actually, when he comes around to it, is this guy actually any good? And that's yet to be seen. But like Garnacho would be a good example. They paid a fortune for him. It's 40 million, which would be a lot of money for a guy for the season he had at United. And sure, like, yeah, he came on there to death against Arsenal. Nearly scored with a cross come shot. But that would be an example of what you're talking about, kind of the way that they spent money.
So Rossini was talking about him and saying that he's had something going on in his personal life that was difficult for him recently. He didn't specify what it was, and that he expects him to get more into the team. They don't play the same way with two wingers the way the previous manager did, so there's less opportunity for him to get into the team. Neto's red card, ironically enough, is actually going to get Garnacho back in the team. So, you know, I just like the chaos theory. The keeper complains because he's crap. Player gets sent off, trusting the keeper. Afterwards, he must be looking at that going, why are you complaining? Yeah. I got booked. I went to bat for you. And that's the contagion that they have at the moment. So the only thing is, Villa is a great get-right game for teams at the moment.
Do you think they've just run out of legs, Villa?
The injuries to Youri Tielemans in particular.
Yourself and McGinn are adamant about that. I think you're speaking on behalf of Villa supporters there. Yeah,
yeah, totally. Tielemans. Like, I think as well, like, they have to question the signings they made. You say the transfers don't matter, and it's hard to know if the money they spent on Onana from Everton was part of that carousel deal that they were doing with Everton, where the money kept slushing between the two clubs for players. They vastly overrated. They spent 50 million on him, and at the time, the Zubimendis of the world were available for something similar. And you're like, which of these players would you rather have as you're chasing down a Champions League place? And at the time, there was talk that Zubimendi would sign for the Spanish enclave at Villa, and it didn't happen.
So. Mm. We've talked about Jordan Pickford this week. It's one of the best saves you'll ever see at the weekend there. Sandro Tonali, injury time, tipped over the bar. And then last night, he made another good save at home to Burnley. Good reflexes.
Yeah.
Do you like Pickford celebrating? What's your opinion on it? Do you like his gesticulations after?
Was it not in the middle
conducting
of
conducting goalkeeping?
The ball was still there.
No, that was United. That was hilarious. That was
the ball was still in play.
Last Monday week, he saved from right at the start of the game. It was a decent save. It was a combination between him and Tarkovsky, I think, cleared it away. And Pickford did his big celebration thing, but the ball was only over there.
Yeah.
Against Newcastle, it was gone, and he did a big one. He did it again last night. He's having a great moment, is Jordan Pickford. Yeah. And maybe even slightly underrated, given his consistency and how long he's been doing this. But the boy loves a celebration.
I think that's all right.
And I'm not commenting on it. I'm just asking about it.
Well, tell us what you think.
No, what do you think? Do you like it? Emi Martinez would have kind of a similar kind of pageantry to him.
Not quite as
gregarious as Jordan, and but like, I think it is extroverted.
Martinez will celebrate like the penalty saves and stuff, but it's nothing like Pickford. Yeah, makes routine saves. Got like,
Martinez was globally criticised after the World Cup final for what he did with his Golden Glove trophy.
Yeah, but he just won the World Cup. Jordan Pickford makes the "I have a giant phallic" symbol thing. After England win the World Cup, all of England will be like, "Oh, good man, Jordan, yeah, cojones on you." Cole Jones, as was it wasn't Barry Davis, Motson,
Yeah, I like both of them. Yeah, Martinez loves a dance after a penalty shootout, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He'll dance to the crowd.
Remember when Martinez, that's totally fine. Different ball game.
Remember when he waved to all the Villa fans to say goodbye?
Yeah,
he was crying after he got sent off against Man United and cost him Champions League football.
Well, to be fair to you, you've always been a bit of a Martinez skeptic, even when everyone was loving him.
Oh no,
like he's thrown another one in.
Oh no, well, he this season his form has actually been outstanding. His goals saved, but I certainly think they could have sold him 18 months ago, and everybody would have been happy. He's like, oh, what a great career he had at Villa, rescued from the scrap heap of Arsenal subs bench.
Yeah,
he was Arteta's goalkeeper, of course, for Arteta's only trophy at Arsenal.
Yeah,
the FA Cup. 2020. I don't think you can take it out of Pickford. You know, it's like Wayne Rooney's aggression, they used to say. You know,
exactly, yeah,
if you took out the aggression to get the player, if you prevent Jordan Pickford from celebrating, if it was to go to VAR, for instance, if Wayne Rooney was celebrating, I think it would ruin Jordan Pickford.
Wayne Rooney got counselling and stayed off the booze, he'd still be playing football. Like, that's the truth about that is, like, we indulge people. Oh, you needed your aggression. You needed to get all those stupid sendings off to put you on the edge, because that's when you played your best football. It's like, Wayne Rooney played unbelievable football as a 15-year-old, like, and a 17-year-old, and he didn't need the weight of the world and the anger.
There's always the big one about, would Fergie have sorted Gaza out? And Gaza himself says, no, like, these are problems that I had from childhood, nothing to do with Fergie. Come here.
Like, Fergie couldn't help Paul McGrath.
Exactly. What his thing was, he suggested he should retire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just very briefly before we get back to Irish football, Irish rugby, huh? How about it? Jerry Thorney's at it again, getting ahead of the curve. We have Jacob Stockdale reportedly in the team that will be announced today officially, correct?
Yeah, 2 o'clock. I'm fairly shocked by that now. I kind of, along with many other people, would have thought that Tommy O'Brien had done enough in his, I was going to say cameo off the bench, but he played 60 odd minutes against England. On the left wing, he was brilliant. But yeah, I'd feel slightly hard done by if I'm Tommy O'Brien, unless he is carrying some type of knock. I know he was heavily strapped up in training, which a bunch of players in the Ireland squad tend to be these days. But Stockdale getting another chance, to be fair to him, because obviously he hasn't played in the Six Nations in years, or hadn't until that France game. And I think after that performance where he wasn't great, and a lot of what went wrong for Ireland in that game, he and himself and Tommy O'Brien were at the very centre of it, so kind of thought that might have been it for Stockdale Six Nations wise until at least next season. But Andy Farrell's given him another shot in the left wing. Good few changes as well. I don't think I expected as many changes in that squad, especially even on the bench, which is predicted. There's a few lads. Nathan Doak might get a chance.
Yeah.
Tom Stewart.
Yeah.
Nick Timoney's obviously starting, so there's plenty of Ulster involvement in that squad, should it be announced as such. But it is great to see that players are being rewarded for form. It's something that we criticised the Ireland selectors for going into the Six Nations. But
Stockdale was bad against France.
Yeah. Well, like one game, but we're taking season form into this stuff, no? Like, he's in the squad because of his season form. It comes down to what he's doing in training.
Yeah.
And also your start left winger is injured as well.
Yeah, I just think that Tommy O'Brien was good. The form was, in fairness, Tommy O'Brien was bad against France, and he did get the opportunity to be on the bench. So,
I think everyone was bad against France. So when you say Stockdale was bad, I don't think Stockdale was any worse than anyone else on the pitch. Do you know? I don't think he had a particularly awful game or anything. They just didn't. It was a look at the bounce for a lot of those high balls.
He's not great under the high ball, though. That's the thing. Like, we were bad under the high ball. We changed. Lowe came on, showed you what you could do. Like, certainly, if you're Wales, would you prefer to play against Stockdale or Tommy O'Brien?
You'd prefer to see change, wouldn't you? You don't want the back three that just tore England apart. So yeah, you'd prefer, like, it's not a massive step down. Like, Stockdale had one bad game against France where everyone else played bad as well.
Is he good under the high ball? Has he been good this season?
Yeah, it's probably not the most prominent part of his game, but he's not poor under the high ball at all.
All right, because there are just some questions about his desire when he gets up there to win those 50-50s. They tend not to be 50-50s, they tend more to be 60-40s.
Yeah, like I don't know how you quantify that. Like,
well, the number of ones that he comes down with.
But Tommy O'Brien against France was not good in the air either.
No.
And then he was brilliant against England in the air. So it's one game. That's not judging.
It is one game, but I don't think he featured in anyone's team.
No.
Yesterday, right? He wasn't in. I think he was kind of out of mind, really. Never mind out of sight.
I thought he'd had his chance.
Mm. But it is interesting. Nick Timoney as well reportedly set the starters. I think he would have wanted.
Yeah. It's a long time coming for Nick Timoney, really. He's
about players on the bench for Thornley, is he? It's a 5-3 split. And it's Sam Prendergast?
No, it's Kieran Frawley.
Right.
And then it's between Tom Farrell and Bundiaki for that number 23 jersey. I'd like to see Tom Farrell rewarded.
I think they have to go with Frawley, right?
Yeah, no, totally.
Because we were talking about it yesterday and JT had Sam Prendergast on the bench.
That's right.
And like, it is the perfect fixture to put him back on the bench.
Yeah.
But it does send a message to Frawley going, everything you do, no matter what you do, we're never going to give you a fair crack of the whip.
Yes. Yeah.
Cancer in a dressing room, right?
Totally.
I thought he was quite good off the bench against England as well.
Yeah.
Very good game. So.
Yeah, nevertheless.
So that's the basis of it. If you've been bad, you'd be like, okay, off you go, you had your chance. Like, but it's not fair to drop him now after a good performance.
Yeah, you have to look out. Yeah, it's not just the narrative of what everyone's talking about. What about Frawley and all this? And so Andy Farrell's responded in kind. Prendergast's name does not appear in Gerry Thornley's projected 23.
Neither.
That is correct. Tom O'Toole starts.
Yeah, massive for him, really. I had kind of put it in my team when we did it yesterday, or the day before. But I kind of was half just expecting him to get another run on the bench because it's not his natural position. But he's obviously impressed in those games and in camp. At the Loosehead now, there are talks about Jeremy Lockman or Lukeman is currently injured. So that probably plays into that decision. Looks like Michael Milne will be on the bench.
Tom Stewart for a Six Nations debut.
Yeah.
Off the bench.
He's been class for Ulster. But he's just a shame. The calibre of hooker ahead of him.
He's actually younger than the other two.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's not been around very long. Like, it's only...
I was going to make the other page. It feels like he's been around a long time.
Yeah, it's only a season and a half ago that Rob Heron was still starting for Ulster. Like, so I know he's played a decent bit for Ireland. But, yeah, no, he's... What is he, 20?
25,
yeah. Yeah, so he's plenty of time.
He's 27 and Keller is 28.
Yeah, we're blessed in that position, really.
So the only changes from 9 to 15, Stockdale. And then the front row, you have O'Toole, Kelleher and Furlong. I was surprised to see Furlong.
I think he needs to run games.
Second row, no John McCarthy. It's Tadhg Byrne moving back there with James Ryan. And then Timoney, as we say, is at 7. The captain's at 8. And Doris Conan at 6. Do you like that?
Well, I want to see what it looks like with him back in the team because he's been excellent off the bench as well. So, and I think what a selection like this is, it's given you incredible flexibility. John McCarthy on the bench, John McCarthy starting, you've got Tadhg Byrne in the back row or Jack Conan in the back row. And maybe at different stages, Conan and Doris can both be doing the same role or splitting responsibilities. It's like you're trying to either your horses for courses.
Mm. So we'll chat about this.
If you're Wales, are you like, yeah, okay, that's we're happier with that than we were with the stacked bench? And
yeah, totally. Yeah.
Are you surprised at this team?
Yeah, I think particularly with the bench, there's a few people getting the shot there, really. So, especially if it's Tom Farrell, not Bundiaki, I'm thinking, right, he's giving people chances, which is nice to see from our perspective. But yeah. I wouldn't be worried, but you'd be a bit like, okay, Wales will be looking at that being like, okay, yeah, we'll take that. That's much better than the team that faced England from their perspective.
The spread is into 25 points on the back of the teams.
So it's dropped down from 27.
Yeah.
So Dan Edwards kicks another conversion, is that what it is?
We will get continued thoughts on the Green 15 later on. You recall Kieran Flynn was on the show with us on Monday, the GA secretary. He was in Dubai. I don't know if he's on this flight, but he has retweeted that the Emirates Airlines have informed the embassy that they will operate a direct flight to Dublin today from Dubai.
Okay.
So this evening. He hasn't tweeted himself or X'd himself that he's actually on this flight, but he has retweeted the announcement. And I've got a push notification from the Irish Times at the same time. So it looks like there's a bit of movement today.
We're speaking to Mike Phillips on Thursday, who's stuck out there at the moment. Was supposed to be coming to the game in Dublin, Ireland v Wales, but is stuck in Dubai at the minute, obviously, with everything that's going on. But we'll be speaking to him Thursday morning.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.